Well, when the Taliban seized control of Afghanistan back in 2021, that happened faster than many people, many governments around the world were prepared to believe would be the way it would unfold. But many local people who worked with our New Zealand Defence Force there were left stranded and in danger of reprisals when the Taliban took over. And among those watching on fairly helplessly at first from here was Ellen Joan Ford. She's a former New Zealand Army captain who had served with our provincial reconstruction team in Bamiyan province in Afghanistan. But over the course of a year, after that, she led a team that got more than 500 people out of Afghanistan and to safety here. Now, for that, Ellen was recognised with a KiwiBank Local Hero Award last year, but she now teaches and researches leadership in business, and now she has a new campaign on her hands, and that's making working life more bearable and better under the banner hashtag Work School Hours. And Ellen joins me now from Palmerston North. Kia ora, Ellen.
Kia ora, thank you for having me on this morning.
Excellent. I say 500, but I think I've shortchanged you there a bit. It was perhaps more than north of 550 or so Afghans were able to...
It was 563 people, and very much a team effort.
We'll just talk a little bit about that, because some people may not recall that, but what was involved in that? Was that a situation where the clock was ticking? You had to get those people out in a hurry or before too many months elapsing because, you know, there was a genuine danger of reprisals or from not being able to get away across the border?
Yes, it very much was a task that was, urgent. The families that we helped, they had all effectively run away from their homes and were living in hiding with their families waiting to be evacuated. And during that period, there were absolutely close calls with those families. Some of them, their extended family did experience effectively punishment because of their association with the New Zealand Defence Force. But one of the biggest things that we were most worried about while we were waiting for each family to be evacuated was just the fact that they didn't have access to money. Mm. And therefore, even just staying alive and being able to feed themselves during that period was one of the big risks for them.
Also, the COVID pandemic would have been raging as well. I imagine that made things much harder in terms of trying to get people across borders and all of that.
Oh, it really did. It was just a whole nother spanner in the mix, if you will. When families crossed borders, because it was all done above board, they had to go to a third country before they then came to New Zealand. And absolutely all the COVID testing and isolation periods were all in place to make that happen.
And to the best of your knowledge, how are they doing now? Are you still in touch with them, or have they kind of passed beyond your orbit?
So for my own sanity, I did sort of put a bit of a line in the sand after they got to New Zealand that I very much hope that other New Zealanders will now help them in terms of settling in New Zealand. So if anyone is listening and would like to help them, you can get in touch through the Red Cross to help welcome these families into New Zealand. But the few that I am still in close contact with, they're doing well. The adults, it's a hard road learning English and adjusting to a completely new culture. But the thing that gets me really excited is actually the children. So I just caught up with some of the kids just 2 weeks ago when I was in Auckland, and especially the little girls. They're at school. They, are smart, bright wee girls. They speak fluent English, and I just can't wait to see what happens as they grow.
And so, and have you been able to stay in touch with some of the people that you yourself would have worked with in your time with the PRT up in Bamiyan?
Yes, well, they were the people that effectively roped me into this task. It was people that I had worked with, and so I cared, and that's what led me to then work and help these people to get out of there. So yes, I actually launched my book in Auckland 2 weeks ago, and some of my Afghan teammates actually came along to support, which was just amazing.
Oh, that's
so
cool. And was it that experience?
Cool. I never would have expected that.
Was it that in that whole project, which must have taken over your life and those who were with you, was that what got you into this study of leadership and so on? Because you did a whole PhD in it, didn't you, after leaving the army?
I did. No, this was... So I was actually already on a mission to change the working world. So Army experience, MBA, PhD, and postdoctoral research on the experiences of working parents. And it was quite literally, it all happened in the same month. It was August 2021. I decided that I wanted to pursue this passion around leadership and making the working world better. I decided I was going to start my own business. And the same month, someone from my team in Afghanistan reached out asking for help. And so, yeah, that did kind of take over about a year of my life, as well as my teammates. So, Chris Parsons and Martin Dransfield, and many others. But it kind of became a great case study, actually, to show what we can achieve when we have great experiences, when we are working.
Yeah, on your
I mean,
site,
this was volunteering, but.
there's some accounts of it. You were saying here under the heading, The Power of Fun. The task was not fun. I did not enjoy all the admin and the documentation in the middle of the night and all of that sort of stuff. But, while you cared so much for the safety of the Afghan families, that drove you on. But then the point of saying that was that you say here, when you've got a tight team, you're working hard, no matter what the task is, the fun really matters, right? So you made a point of doing that to try and do fun things, whether it was working remotely online with your colleagues, and if you didn't have that, you wouldn't have been able to perhaps sustain what you were doing.
Oh, absolutely. So my leadership model is belonging, autonomy, and purpose. And under belonging, which is when people really feel that they belong as their full selves, in order to feel that way, it is important to have fun. And yeah, this volunteer task, it was not fun. There were so many aspects of it that were grueling, tedious, frustrating, emotionally draining. It wasn't fun. But the thing that kind of kept us going is we made it fun together. So I made some ridiculous rap videos to try and make my team laugh. We would share funny stories. And I think it's quite incredible that people can endure pretty unfun tasks if they are working with people that they, care about and can enjoy each other's company.
Well, that brings us on, I guess, to work school hours. So you'll have to describe it for us because I've seen it variously described as a movement. You mentioned the book, it's a hashtag as well. But is it a movement or is it a campaign as well as the book that you've written?
That's a great question. I'm just going to go all out here and say, yes, it's a movement to change the working world for the better. So yes, that's what hashtag work school hours is to, and the book title, which is A Revolution. So I think that kind of does it as well. A revolution for parents, workplaces, and the world.
Yeah,
And
so
that is absolutely the intention.
you want to get rid of 9 to 5. That's the guts of it, isn't it? In fact, there's the heading, ditch the 9 to 5. And that comes not just from you, but this is the interviews you've done with in your postdoctoral research, isn't it, with a whole range of families.
Yes, so the 9 to 5, which came into effect more than 100 years ago, that was based on the assumption that every household has a dedicated worker, which is a man typically, and a dedicated caregiver of children, which is typically a woman. And so the people going to work 9 to 5 were not the same people who also had to pick up the kids from school at 3 o'clock and spend 12, 13 weeks of the year with them during school holidays. They were two different people, but of course, that is not our workforce today and hasn't been for decades. So the construct, it was great progress in its time, but it is archaic and absolutely needs to be changed to meet the needs of today.
But I don't know. I mean, companies might have a different perspective. Indeed, some employees, because I mean, yes, it's our, but we've got a. It does give us some certainty, some structure to the day, doesn't it? If most companies know that other companies are keeping the same business hours and that people can be expected to be, online or responding to their queries. I mean, no hours will suit everybody. So if you say work school hours, are you saying ditch the 9 to 5 and have 9 to 3 instead?
So no, it's not as dogmatic as the whole world now works 9 to 3. That's not the point of it. And we wouldn't want our hospitals to close after 3 o'clock. That wouldn't be particularly good
No.
for our society. So no, it's a set of principles, and there's three of them. And the first is that organizations should do more to value the fact people have things they care about outside of work. Now, that could be children. That was the genesis for this, but actually everybody has things they care about outside of work. The second principle is focusing more on outputs. So instead of getting so caught up in how many hours did someone do, we actually need to focus on, well, what did they deliver? Because that's why we actually employed them. And the third principle of hashtag work school hours is giving people more flexibility to achieve those great outputs. Not for a second am I suggesting that people don't get their work done, but give them flexibility so they can do their work and also tend to the things that they care about outside of work. And I assure you, this is a commercially smart, leadership-based movement and proposition.
But isn't that practically happening in a lot of places anyway? You know, there may be businesses that are, you know, in business commercially, public-facing ones that'll operate, you know, 9 to 5 or something similar. Yet employees within them will have a bit of flexibility to do that stuff, you know, to change their hours. Surely that does happen.
So I wish that was the case. If so, then I wouldn't need to be doing this movement anymore, and I would be very happy. I would like to do myself out of a job. So yes, there are organizations that are doing that, and that's fantastic. So any organization that's offering some kind of flexibility, being more creative about how they construct work, amazing, and keep going. But the reality from the data in my research, which was from hundreds and hundreds of working parents across New Zealand and further afield, internationally, is that no, that is not the experience of most working parents. They are in organizations where they do not have the flexibility that they need and they are struggling.
Is it a lot of this is about hierarchies, though, isn't it? Because are they highly hierarchical businesses, ones with, you know, very strong leaders at the top? Are those the ones that are perhaps less likely to want to be more flexible? So the people that have the time requirements you're talking about probably couldn't have them met in those companies. Are those the ones that need to listen to what you're saying?
Oh, no, it's quite a range actually. There are organizations who are, you know, big corporates through to small, medium-sized enterprises who are making changes. And there's also the same range of organizations that are not. So I would say this can apply to all organizations.
And what about the sort of really under pressure ones? You say maybe it's a bad example because it's one of those non-time lock things like the police. You know, they're trying to recruit 500 more officers. They've got a problem at the moment because they're not happy with their pay offer. So that's going to be difficult for the government to meet its target. But for an organisation like that that's facing pressure or nursing, whatever, are those the ones that could get the most benefit from being as flexible as possible? Because if it's hard enough to get people into those particular professions, then a lack of flexibility about when you work is going to be a bigger problem.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the commercial benefits to adopting some of these principles is so that you can attract and retain great talent. And so, one way you can attract people is with salaries, but actually, that only goes so far. And so, another way to attract people and retain great people is to create an incredible environment where their people can thrive, where they have belonging, autonomy. So, that's the flexibility and purpose. And so just, you know, the nursing profession, for example, one of the stories in my book is a nurse who could do 2 night shifts per week, but the hospital said, no, we have a minimum 3 shift per week policy. And so they lost her, which just seems kind of outrageous when you're desperate for people. You need to be a bit more creative about what the rules are for employing them.
But if even if companies recognize this and you go and speak to them and they say, yes, we hear what you're saying and we accept that, you know, it's likely that productivity can be better if we do this, even if it's harder for them to administer and keep track of, and means them changing the way they worked. In the end, we've got a bit of a cost of living crisis, possibly unemployment going up. In the end, isn't it going to be money, that trumps all? So if people get offered a bit more money, even if the hours are worse and they don't, you know, it doesn't fit with work school hours, that will end up being the thing that tips the balance and people end up working hours that don't really suit them.
So, 2 points on that. First of all, implementing the principles of hashtag work school hours is not a burden on organizations. You said it could be a bit more administrative. Actually,
Well, it means they've got to change, you know, change the way they work and organise themselves.
Yeah, and the benefits of doing that absolutely outweigh some of the administration that might be required up front. So this is not a burden for employers to require them more work. Actually, it frees up the leaders to do the work that actually matters. So I think that is important to note. This is something that is good for organizations. And in terms of your second point, around, well, won't the cost of living crisis and higher salaries end up motivating people? So there's two things there. First of all, yeah, when we do go through a recession and organizations maybe aren't quite so desperate when it comes to retaining talent, it's one thing to retain talent, but it's another to actually have them highly engaged and productive and doing their best work. So when there are people that work in an organization but don't really want to be there, they're just kind of stuck because, economy's tight, that doesn't mean they're going to be doing their best work. So organizations sh certainly shouldn't take that as a win. And secondly, the data from my research, I've got countless examples of people walking away from significantly higher salaries for massive pay cuts because it gives them flexibility. So when it comes to, having time with family, and also I should say the cost of childcare, which often we forget about that in the calculations, people will value an organization that gives them more flexibility.
Well, good luck with that. That's Ellen Joan Ford. She researches and teaches leadership and business and is working the, let's call it a campaign, a movement, hashtag work school hours. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Ellen. Well,
Hey,
last.
thank you so very much for having me. And just very quickly, the book hashtag Work School Hours, you can get it on my website, which is my full name, ellenjoanford.com. I'd love people to buy it. My goal isn't to sell books. My goal is to change the working world, and I hope people will read it and implement it.
Sure thing. And if anyone was confused, your name used to be Ellen Joan Nelson. So you'll also see that name attached to some of this material as your reprisals or from not being able to get away across the border.
Yes, it very much was a task that was urgent. The families that we helped, they had all effectively run away from their homes and were living in hiding with their families waiting to be evacuated. And during that period, there were absolutely close calls with those families. Some of them, their extended family did experience effectively punishment because of their association with the New Zealand Defence Force. But one of the biggest things that we were most worried about while we were waiting for each family to be evacuated was just the fact that they didn't have access to money, and therefore even just staying alive and being able to feed themselves during that period was one of the big risks for them.
Also, the COVID pandemic would have been raging as well. I imagine that made things much, much harder in terms of trying to get people across borders and all of that.
Oh, it really did. It was just, a whole nother spanner in the mix, if you will. Getting when families crossed borders, because it was all done, above board, they had to go to a third country before they then came to New Zealand. And absolutely all the COVID testing and isolation periods were all in place to make that happen.
And to the best of your knowledge, how are they doing now? Are you still in touch with them, or have they kind of passed beyond your orbit?
So for my own sanity, I did sort of put a bit of a line in the sand after they got to New Zealand that I very much hope that other New Zealanders will now help them in terms of settling in New Zealand. So if anyone is listening and would like to help them, you can get in touch through the Red Cross to help welcome these families into New Zealand. But the few that I am still in close contact with, yeah, they're doing well. The adults, it's a hard road. Learning English and adjusting to a completely new culture. But the thing that gets me really excited is actually the children. So I just caught up with some of the kids just 2 weeks ago when I was in Auckland, and especially the little girls. They're at school. They are smart, bright wee girls. They speak fluent English, and I just can't wait to see what happens as they grow.
And so, and have you been able to stay in touch with some of the people that you yourself would have worked with in your time with the PRT up in Bamiyan?
Yes, well, they were the people that effectively roped me into this task. It was people that I had worked with, and so I cared, and that's what led me to then work and help these people to get out of there. So yes, I actually launched my book in Auckland 2 weeks ago, and some of my Afghan teammates actually came along to support, which was just amazing.
Oh, that's
So I
cool.
just, yeah,
And was it
pretty
that
cool. I never would have
experience?
expected that.
Was it that in that whole project, which must have taken over your life and those who were with you, was that what got you into this study of leadership and so on? Because you did a whole PhD in it, didn't you, after leaving the army?
I did. No, this was, so I was actually already on a mission to change the working world. So army experience, MBA, PhD, and postdoctoral research on the experiences of working parents. And it was quite literally, it all happened in the same month. It was August 2021. I decided that I wanted to pursue this passion around leadership and making the working world better. I decided I was going to start my own business. And the same month, someone from my team in Afghanistan reached out asking for help. And so, yeah, that did kind of take over about a year of my life, as well as my teammates. So, Chris Parsons and Martin Dransfield, and many others. But it kind of became a great case study, actually, to show what we can achieve when we have great experiences, when we are working.
Yeah, on your
I mean,
site,
this was volunteering, but.
there's some accounts of it. You were saying here under the heading, "The Power of Fun." The task was not fun. I did not enjoy all the admin and the documentation in the middle of the night and all of that sort of stuff. But while you cared so much for the safety of the Afghan families, that drove you on. But then the point of saying that was that you say here, when you've got a tight team, you're working hard, no matter what the task is, the fun really matters, right? So you made a point of doing that to try and do fun things, whether it was working remotely online with your colleagues, and if you didn't have that, you wouldn't have been able to perhaps sustain what you were doing.
Oh, absolutely. So my leadership model is belonging, autonomy, and purpose. And under belonging, which is when people really feel that they belong as their full selves, in order to feel that way, it is important to have fun. And yeah, this volunteer task, it was not fun. There were so many aspects of it that were grueling, tedious, frustrating, emotionally draining. It wasn't fun. But the thing that kind of kept us going is we made it fun together. So I made some ridiculous rap videos to try and make my team laugh. We would share funny stories. And I think it's quite incredible that people can endure pretty unfun tasks if they are working with people that they, care about and can enjoy each other's company.
Well, that brings us on, I guess, to work school hours. So you'll have to describe it for us because I've seen it variously described as a movement. You mentioned the book, but, it's a hashtag as well. But is it a movement or is it a campaign as well as the book that you've written?
That's a great question. I'm just going to go all out here and say, yes, it's a movement to change the working world for the better. So yes, that's what hashtag work school hours is to, and the book title, which is A Revolution. So I think that kind of does it as well. A revolution for parents, workplaces, and the world.
Yeah,
And
so
that is absolutely the intention.
you want to get rid of 9 to 5. That's the guts of it, isn't it? In fact, there's the heading, ditch the 9 to 5. And that comes not just from you, but this is the interviews you've done with, in your postdoctoral research, isn't it, with a whole range of families.
Yes, so the 9 to 5, which came into effect more than 100 years ago, that was based on the assumption that every household has a dedicated worker, which is a man typically, and a dedicated caregiver of children, which is typically a woman. And so the people going to work 9 to 5 were not the same people who also had to pick up the kids from school at 3 o'clock and spend 12, 13 weeks of the year with them during school holidays. They were two different people, but of course, that is not our workforce today and hasn't been for decades. So the construct, it was great progress in its time, but it is archaic and absolutely needs to be changed to meet the needs of today.
But I don't know. I mean, companies might have a different perspective. Indeed, some employees, because I mean, yes, it's our, but we've got a. It does give us some certainty, some structure to the day, doesn't it? If most companies know that other companies are keeping the same business hours and that people can be expected to be, online or responding to their queries. I mean, no hours will suit everybody. So if you say work school hours, are you saying ditch the 9 to 5 and have 9 to 3 instead?
So no, it's not that It's not as dogmatic as the whole world now works 9 till 3. That's not the point of it. And, we wouldn't want our hospitals to close after 3 o'clock. That wouldn't be particularly good
No.
for our society. So, no, it's a set of principles, and there's three of them. And the first is that organizations should do more to value the fact people have things they care about outside of work. Now, that could be children. That was the genesis for this, but actually, everybody has things they care about outside of work. The second principle is focusing more on outputs. So instead of getting so caught up in how many hours did someone do, we actually need to focus on, well, what did they deliver? Because that's why we actually employed them. And the third principle of hashtag work school hours is giving people more flexibility to achieve those great outputs. Not for a second am I suggesting that people don't get their work done, but give them flexibility so they can do their work and also tend to the things that they care about outside of work. And I assure you, this is a commercially smart, leadership-based movement and proposition.
But isn't that practically happening in a lot of places anyway? There may be businesses that are, in business commercially, public-facing ones that'll operate, 9 to 5 or something similar. Yet employees within them will have a bit of flexibility to do that stuff, to change their hours. Surely that does happen.
So, I wish that was the case. If so, then I wouldn't need to be doing this movement anymore, and I would be very happy. I would like to do myself out of a job. So, yes, there are organizations that are doing that, and that's fantastic. So, any organization that's offering some kind of flexibility, being more creative about how they construct work, amazing, and keep going. But the reality from the data in my research, which was from hundreds and hundreds of working parents across New Zealand and further afield, internationally, is that no, that is not the experience of most working parents. They are in organizations where they do not have the flexibility that they need and they are struggling.
Is it a lot of this is about hierarchies, though, isn't it? Because are they highly hierarchical businesses, ones with, very strong leaders at the top? Are those the ones that are perhaps less likely to want to be more flexible? So the people that have the time requirements you're talking about probably couldn't have them met in those companies. Are those the ones that need to listen to what you're saying?
Oh, no, it's quite a range actually. There are organizations who are, big corporates through to small, medium-sized enterprises who are making changes. And there's also the same range of organizations that are not. So I would say this can apply to all organizations.
And what about the sort of really under pressure ones? You say maybe it's a bad example because it's one of those non-time lock things like the police. They're trying to recruit 500 more officers. They've got a problem at the moment because they're not happy with their pay offer. So that's going to be difficult for the government to meet its target. But for an organisation like that that's facing pressure or nursing, whatever, are those the ones that could get the most benefit from being as flexible as possible? Because if it's hard enough to get people into those particular professions, then a lack of flexibility about when you work is going to be a bigger problem.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the commercial benefits to adopting some of these principles is so that you can attract and retain great talent. And so, one way you can attract people is with salaries, but actually, that only goes so far. And so, another way to attract people and retain great people is to create an incredible environment where their people can thrive, where they have belonging, autonomy. So, that's the flexibility and purpose. And so just, the nursing profession, for example, one of the stories in my book is a nurse who could do 2 night shifts per week, but the hospital said, no, we have a minimum 3 shift per week policy. And so they lost her, which just seems kind of outrageous when you're desperate for people. You need to be a bit more creative about what the rules are for employing them.
But if even if companies recognize this and you go and speak to them and they say, yes, we hear what you're saying and we accept that, it's likely that productivity can be better if we do this, even if it's harder for them to administer and keep track of, and means them changing the way they worked. In the end, we've got a bit of a cost of living crisis, possibly unemployment going up. In the end, isn't it going to be money, that trumps all? So if people get offered a bit more money, even if the hours are worse and they don't, it doesn't fit with work school hours, that will end up being the thing that tips the balance and people end up working hours that don't really suit them.
So, 2 points on that. First of all, implementing the principles of hashtag work school hours is not a burden on organizations. You said it could be a bit more administrative. Actually,
Well, it means they've got to change, change the way they work and organize themselves.
yeah, and the benefits of doing that absolutely outweigh some of the administration that might be required up front. So this is not a burden for employers to require them more work. Actually, it frees up the leaders to do the work that actually matters. So I think that is important to note. This is something that is good for organizations. And in terms of your second point, around, well, won't the cost of living crisis and higher salaries end up motivating people? So there's two things there. First of all, yeah, when we do go through a recession and organizations maybe aren't quite so desperate when it comes to retaining talent, it's one thing to retain talent, but it's another to actually have them highly engaged and productive and doing their best work. So when there are people that work in an organization but don't really want to be there, they're just kind of stuck because, economy's tight, that doesn't mean they're going to be doing their best work. So organizations certainly shouldn't take that as a win. And secondly, the data from my research, I've got countless examples of people walking away from significantly higher salaries for massive pay cuts because it gives them flexibility. So when it comes to, having time with family, and also I should say the cost of childcare, which often we forget about that in the calculations, people will value an organization that gives them more flexibility.
Well, good luck with that. That's Ellen Joan Ford. She researches and teaches leadership and business and is working the, let's call it a campaign, a movement, hashtag work school hours. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Ellen. Well,
Hey,
last.
thank you so very much for having me. And just very quickly, the book hashtag Work School Hours, you can get it on my website, which is my full name, ellenjoanford.com. I'd love people to buy it. My goal isn't to sell books. My goal is to change the working world, and I hope people will read it and implement it.
Sure thing. And if anyone was confused, your name used to be Ellen Joan Nelson. So you'll also see that name attached to some of this material as well. But thanks so much for joining us this morning, Ellen.